Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup Podcast. Chad Young here, and we're doing something a little different this week. We've done this before, but it's been a while where Pete and I, unfortunately, could not find a way to get together to record, and so we've each done our own recordings. We're going to splice them together here. I think this will work pretty well, but we're going to start off today's episode just by telling you a little bit about what we're going to do, which is Pete and I each took some time to look at stats that surprised us, caught us off guard, or we thought were interesting in some way in the early season. We started off looking for three. I might get to a fourth. We'll see how much time we have. But the way this is going to work is after my little intro here, I'm going to kick it over to Pete. He's going to go through his first stat, which has to do with guys taken in the second round of drafts. Then I'm going to come back. I'll talk about my first stat. Then we'll go back to Pete for his next one and so on and so forth, just going back and forth. You don't get much dialogue or back and forth here. It'll be, you know, alternating monologues here, but I think there's some interesting numbers and some good things to take a look at here. Hopefully you'll find this interesting. Like I said, Pete's going to go first with some interesting thoughts on what is happening with guys taken early in drafts, not the first rounders, but the second rounders. A lot of them are struggling, and Pete's got thoughts on that.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 163. I'm sure that Chad has already gone over all of this in the intro, so I don't need to get into necessarily the style of podcast this episode is. I will say, those of you who listen to the show know, I normally do not talk for very prolonged periods of time, so please bear with me if I'm like running out of breath or something like that, but I'm going to give this my best shot. So as I'm sure Chad described in the introduction, we're providing like three stats that stick out to us in the early going, and I had a hard time coming up with three. I had a hard time coming up with one because it's still so early in the season, but we got a show to produce. We got to come at you with information, and we have to take that information and kind of project it forward. And in the early part of the season, that really means telling you it's going to be okay, no matter what these numbers say, that none of this, you know, is definite. It is based on just a handful of baseball games so far. And because the sample size is so small across all of baseball, I wanted to try and look at things from a holistic, like league-wide view in some cases. So rather than looking at like an individual player's stats, kind of looking at a group of player stats or the league stats or, you know, as we'll see by position in a little bit. And the first thing that kind of stood out to me is, you know, I love my home league. It's a lot of fun, but I'm off to a terrible start, particularly offensively. And so in a head-to-head league, that can be like a huge bummer because you start out with this terrible record. But you got to look at the players on your team and ask yourself, do you believe in those players? Do you think this is something that will get fixed, or is this a problem going forward? And I see Tristan Cassis, 6 for 31. Maybe he is just going to be a 220 guy, but that's 194. He's not going to stay at 194. Gunnar Henderson is 1 for 9 with a million strikeouts since coming back. Yordan Alvarez, 4 for 29. What's going on there? Luis Robert, you know, who knows how good he actually is. He's put forward monster fantasy seasons before. He's put forward complete duds. But he's 4 for 28 so far. He's not a 143 hitter with no power because he has not hit a homer yet. So in Carlos Correa, there's another one, 3 for 29. So that's all just on one team. Like, obviously, that team's getting pounded into the sand through the first couple weeks of the season, but these players are going to bounce back. And I think the best example, or, like, sample I could come up with to, I don't know if this is going to put people at ease or make them feel sick, but my first stat is specifically the number 220. 220. Because 220 is the combined batting average of every hitter that had an ADP of second round for 12 team leagues. So we're talking about picks 13 through 24. On NFBC, that would be Vlad Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Francisco Lindor. Then we get a pitcher, Tarek Skubal, so he obviously doesn't count in this. Jackson Churio, Yordan Alvarez, Bryce Harper, Jaron Duran, Jazz Chisholm. Then we get Zach Wheeler. Again, doesn't count for this. William Contreras and Trey Turner. So those 10 bats have combined for a batting average of 220 so far. And it doesn't get much better when you look at the power. Combined, those 10 bats have 8 homers. Half of those homers have come from Jazz Chisholm. So If we want to make it a weirder sample and just remove Jazz from this, obviously it'll get a lot uglier. Jazz is only 8 for 33. He's not lighting the world on fire, but he does have 4 homers, which is half of the total of these 10 players so far this season. Nobody expects these numbers to continue for any of these players, obviously. But if you're first hitter in very specific cases, most people wouldn't hitter in the first round. But if you took Paul Skeens in the first round and then a hitter, it's your first hitter. Otherwise, it's your second hitter. This production's not going to continue for them. You drafted them for a reason. You're going to expect them to produce. And so you can make, you know, mountains out of molehills for these guys, especially on an individual basis, right? If we looked at Julio Rodriguez, you know, he's a guy who's been inconsistent, especially at the start of seasons throughout his career. You know, William Contreras obviously has established himself as the number one catcher in fantasy. He's still a catcher. We have to limit our expectations in terms of what we expect from catchers in terms of production. And, you know, Trey Turner, is he just getting older? All these kinds of concerns that we've had. Like Vlad Guerrero Jr., monster season last year. Another guy who's been inconsistent throughout his career. But when you kind of look at it all together as one, like, second-round group of hitters who we as a fantasy community have established as these are the players that we want towards the top of drafts, and they're batting a combined 220 with only 8 home runs, I think we can kind of relax knowing the season is still young. It's still super early. These guys are going to bounce back. And so if we wanted to dive into a couple of them, you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. hasn't homered yet. As of this recording, I'm recording on April 6th around noontime, so the Sunday games have not started yet. So Vlad's probably going to hit, you know, like 4 homers today, and all of this is going to be irrelevant. But he hasn't really been himself so far this season. Again, no homers. He is batting 286, but he has a BABIP of 370, which we certainly wouldn't expect from Vlad going forward. Another guy who I just expect to be totally fine, just a slow start. You look at the plate discipline numbers under the hood. Yeah, the strikeout rate's up, but he's still hovering around that 10% walk rate. And we can bring up those numbers just because those are the most likely to kind of stabilize early is plate discipline. He looks fine there. Average exit velocity, I absolutely would not care to make a big deal out of such a small sample, but for what it's worth, he's right at where he was last year in terms of average exit velocity. The launch angle, which has been the biggest concern, I think I feel comfortable saying, for Vlad Jr. early on in his career, is currently the highest launch angle of his career at 13.3 degrees. So plenty under the hood to feel good about Vlad. If we wanted to look at the next guy on that list, who would have been, sorry, I just forgot, Julio Rodriguez. This one is a little bit different, but if folks remember, Julio Rodriguez last year was doing well. Looked like he was really breaking in, you know, going to have a typical, you know, first rounder, second rounder season. And then he had that high ankle sprain, and he just really wasn't the same since. Well, let's make ourselves feel better about Julio Rodriguez. Sure, the strikeout rate doesn't look great. It really hasn't throughout his major league career. The walk rate so far is way up. And he's hitting the ball 94.8 miles an hour so far. Again, not to make mountains out of molehills when it comes to average exit velocity this early in the season. But it's still comforting knowing, like, okay, he's hitting the ball hard. Sure, the strikeouts are up a little bit, but so are the walks. Everything should stabilize. Julio Rodriguez at 24 years old is going to be perfectly fine. We get into a couple of these other names. Francisco Lindor is one that is a notorious slow starter. He has not barreled a ball yet. Last year, his barrel rate was 13.6%. That's elite. Strikeouts aren't a problem. Launch angle's not a problem. Hitting the ball plenty hard by his standards. He's going to be fine. Francisco Lindor just starts off slow. Bryce Harper, Yordan Alvarez, do we really need to talk about them? These are proven fantasy studs that have done it time and time again. Jackson Churio, I mean, if we just wipe off his first game of the year where he was 0 for 5 with 5 strikeouts, his numbers already become a lot better. But Jackson Churio is another player I'm not worried about. Average exit velocity, 93 miles an hour. If you want to stress about something, you could stress about that 0% walk rate. He has not taken a walk yet. But that's only in 41 plate appearances, which is still not great. You still want to see him taking walks. You don't want a 14-0 strikeout to walk ratio. That's not great. Do I expect Jackson Churio to take walks, or do I think this is a problem for the rest of his career? Of course, he'll take some walks. It was only 7% last year. If you drafted him in an OBP league, you should have expected he might not be such a stud in that category. But again, it's just a slow start to the season for Jackson Churio. I mean, it does feel silly telling you on April 6th that you should not be giving up on your second round picks. But if there are people in your leagues who are looking at a guy like Jackson Chourio and saying, oh, you know what, maybe we put the cart before the horse there a little bit, took him a little bit too early, and you can give up like a top 50 player to get Jackson Chourio, well, then of course you should go and do that because the sample size is not big enough to scare me away. And I want to bring that up before we get to the next guy on this list, because the next guy on this list is Jarren Duran, who I think of all the hitters I mentioned at the beginning, maybe even including William Contreras, going so early because NFBC is usually two catcher leagues, and so his ADP is going to be a little bit higher. I think people were most worried about Jarren Duran, and that's because we have this natural feeling of like late bloomers are often not legit. And it's why Brent Rooker was at a discount in a lot of drafts I was in, and that's why I think Jarren Duran, which isn't really a discount, like I'm talking about him as a second round pick, was still giving people the ick. They were still a little bit worried. I mean, Chad mentioned it in our last episode that he wasn't fully believing in Jarren Duran, even though there's nothing under the hood that should suggest otherwise. And so you see Jarren Duran get off to the start, 222 average, 256 OBP, again, 39 plate appearances, but no homers. There may be people in your leagues who are like, oh man, I think I reached too early for Jarren Duran. I gave in to the ADP or whatever the case may be. Jarren Duran's numbers under the hood look better than they did last season. And it's not that they looked bad last season. They just look elite this year. Sure, he's not walking. He's got a 2.6% walk rate. That's probably like one or two walks so far this season. The strikeout rate would be the lowest of his career. His average exit velocity, again, I said I didn't want to bring this up, and now I just keep bringing it up, but it's hard not to look at when it is 94.4 miles an hour for Jarren Duran and a barrel rate of 13.8. So it looks like, to me, he's having quite a bit of bad luck. Jarren Duran's BABIP throughout his career, keep in mind if these first 2 years have very limited plate appearances. We're talking under 250 plate appearances, but still, 318 BABIP in 2021, 302 in 2022, 381 in 2023, and last year, 345. So you could say like, well, that's a really high BABIP. I don't know if he'd be able to repeat that. First of all, he is kind of the player that's capable of repeating that number. But even if you think he can't, even if you think, no, 345, he's not going to do that. I think he's going to be more, I don't know where you would come up with this number, but a 315 BABIP guy. Okay, fair enough. His BABIP so far this year is 276. When you're hitting the ball as hard as he is, and you're going to get the volume that he's going to get, you're just going to put forward a monster fantasy season. And he looks like he is in line to do that again. He hasn't been caught stealing yet. He's swiped three bags. I expect that to continue. Obviously, he's not going anywhere from the top of that lineup. So I think it's an extreme anomaly that he only has one run so far. That feels obviously extremely low. And I do expect the power to pick up at some point. Not that he has monster power. We talked about this last week. But he should once again be able to get to that 20-homer figure, if not very close. And so when you look at the complete package, he pretty much is going to produce in every category, save for RBI. He's probably not going to produce a lot of RBI hitting at the top of the lineup. But Jarren Duran is not a player I'm worried about, even though he kind of fits the bill of a first-week buyer's remorse type player. Jazz Chisholm is off to a start that I think people were kind of hoping for, so I don't think there's a whole lot to make you feel better about here. He's awesome. He, like Duran, is hitting the ball hard. He is barreling the ball like crazy. Is it the torpedo bat? Is it just that Jazz Chisholm is a good player? I don't know. I think the torpedo bat is fun. I do know that Jazz Chisholm is just a good player, though, so I don't want to put too much stock into that. But if he found a tool to really maximize his ability, all the better. Strikeouts are once again a problem for him. They have been a serious problem for Jazz Chisholm in the past, so I guess it's something to watch. But if you're just in a typical batting average league, then I don't think there's a whole lot to worry about, because you should have drafted him knowing he's probably going to hit somewhere between 250 and 270, but that he has the potential to hit 35 homers with a ton of RBI and maybe a lot of runs if he moves up that lineup at all. So Jazz Chisholm is doing kind of exactly what we thought he would do, I guess. And so there's really nothing to write home about there. That leaves the last two here, William Contreras and Trey Turner. Maybe saving the most concerning for second to last here, because it has been a disaster of a start to the season for William Contreras. But it has kind of been a disaster to the season for a lot of players in the Brewers. Not that that's an excuse for him. He is still walking a lot. That walk rate is at 18%, which is obviously absurd and unsustainable. Under the hood, it is a little scary. He's not hitting the ball hard. He has not been barreling the ball much at all. Even the launch angle's down. The launch angle's brutal. The launch angle's below 0 degrees. So it has just been a tough start to the season for William Contreras. But if you paid up in drafts to take him as a late second rounder or early third rounder or whatever it is, it's still way too early to give up on him. So I don't know what more to tell you other than don't, because unlike these other guys, there's not a lot of hope under the hood. But if you could get, I guess if you could get any of the other players that we've named, like I would do a Duran for Contreras swap. Sure, I'd rather have Duran, but I still feel like at this early in the season, if you made the decision to take Contreras over Duran and you structured your team around taking Contreras that early, it's still way too early to trade him for anything less than a potentially elite player. And that takes us to Trey Turner. Trey Turner, who has been one of the most consistent producers in fantasy for a very, very long time now, has, I guess, in some ways showed signs of slippage. He's dealt with injuries last year. Can't remember what it was, but it knocked him out for a few weeks over the summer. But still, through 539 plate appearances, he swatted 21 homers. So he's probably on an even better power pace than we're typically used to from Trey Turner. And a lot of those aging signs, like the inability to catch up for fastballs, increased strikeouts, etc., really aren't there. He's been fine against fastballs, 333 batting average, 315 expected batting average. The strikeout rate is exactly what it was 2 years ago. It's 21.7%, which maybe for Trey Turner is a little high, obviously, relative to the rest of his career, but it's still not like a bad strikeout rate. So Trey Turner, as long as he's healthy, this 2 weeks of baseball is not enough to make me concerned about his slow start. So looking at this big picture, you probably didn't need me to walk you through 10 of the most elite players in fantasy baseball and tell you that everything's going to be fine on April 6th. But inexperienced players, newer players, impatient people in general can make some rash decisions early on based on like abhorrent production. And when you look at William Contreras, or you look at Yordan Alvarez, or you look at Francisco Lindor, that would qualify as abhorrent production so far. And when that production coincides with someone's record being terrible or them being really far down the roto standings, you might be able to pluck them for a little bit of a discount. And in my eyes, and in I'm sure most of yours, the value of these players has not gone down at all just because of the first couple of weeks of the season. I personally wasn't taking a catcher as early as William Contreras was going, so I wouldn't have him as a late second round pick. And maybe there's the order of some of these other guys I would flip and switch around and whatnot. But at the end of the day, they're all still elite players that if I drafted them, I'm going to continue to treat them as such.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the right way to be looking at this. I mean, it makes a ton of sense to reach out to people who've got some of these disappointing early round players, see if they're willing to sell low. But yeah, I'm not selling low on my guys when I've got them. I've got some Duran, among others, and I've got Turner on a team. And I think you just wait him out. I think that's the right thing to do. Having said that, I want to take a look at a player who I am buying, I don't know, low, high, buying differently on, I guess we'll say. And that is Nolan Arenado. So Nolan Arenado, I'm not really sure how you would qualify buying high or low, but he obviously had a rather poor season last season. Certainly by his standards, he had a 314 WOBA that was a 102 WRC plus. That was coming off a year we had a 106 WRC plus. So a pretty steep drop off from a guy who, for most of his career, has been one of the better third basemen out there. Coming into camp this year, we talked about this a little on the show. There were some reports, without numbers, but there were some reports that his bat speed was back up. One of the things I did is I went and looked at bat speed gainers through the first week or so of the season here. That is going to be guys who qualified last year or qualified so far this year and have seen their bat speed increase. And if I sort this by the biggest gains, Arenado's not, you know, top of that list, but he is 16th on that list out of more than 200 players. I think that's right. 167, not quite 200, but top 10% of guys in terms of gaining bat speed. There's also a stat that Statcast has related to bat speed called fast or hard hit, hard swing percentage, which is the percentage of swings that are over 75 miles per hour. Arenado is the second biggest gainer on that. The guy ahead of him on that, by the way, is Vinny Pascantino. If you look at the overall speed difference, we'll talk about some of those guys in a minute, but Arenado, swinging the bat harder, which is something we had heard, and has a 183 WRC plus. Now, you know, 7 games, 33 plate appearances, but he's not striking out. He's walking a ton. He's got a home run. He only hit 16 home runs last year, so even having one early on is a good sign. He's always been a guy, like, he doesn't swing through a lot of pitches, so his contact rate, it's not like you can look at his contact rate and be like, oh, his contact rate's way up. In fact, his O contact is down, but his Z contact is up. He's swinging a little bit more in the zone, a little bit less out of the zone, so when you couple those things, his contact rate looks generally fine. But he is swinging harder. He's swinging the bat faster than he did last year, which was reportedly a real issue for him. Now, how that's showing up in the numbers is a little bit, I don't know, it's a little bit iffier. He only has a 28% hard hit rate. That's actually down from last year. He has a 4% barrel rate. That is up from last year, but that's one barrel. His barrel rate last year was 3.2%, 4%, also not good. And, you know, it's so early. Had he had one more barrel, it'd be 8%. That would look great. So not a lot to see there. He does have a 107.9 max EV, which is down for where he was for much of his career, but is up above what his max EV was last year. You know, it still adds up to an ex-WOBA of 275. It is not like he is out there just mashing the ball. And that's a little concerning, I suppose. But I see that faster bat speed. He says he's healthy. And I'm willing to, like I said, I don't know if it's buying high or buying low. I think it's a little bit of buying middle, right? It's buying high given how well he's performed so far this year. It's buying low given you're buying on, hey, look, he hasn't been really good for a couple years. You really believe that he's going to be that good this year? And the answer is like, no, I don't think he's going to be as good as he is right now, right? The 427 WOBA he's got for the first week of the season, there's a 375 BABIP there. He's never going to keep that up. The 9.1% strikeout rate is not going to stay that low. But the last couple years, he's at a 327 and a 314 WOBA. I think he could beat both of those numbers. I certainly think he could beat last year's numbers. And if that's the case, then he is an interesting guy to buy in on. And it really comes down to the fact that he seems to be healthier, at least in terms of his ability to swing the bat. And that's something that I think, you know, in the early stages of the season, we talk about this a lot, there just aren't a lot of numbers you can rely on. Even strikeout rates and walk rates don't stabilize through the 33 plate appearances he had, 39 plate appearances after today. We're recording this on Sunday, by the way. You'll hear it on Monday. The 39 plate appearances, a 7.7% strikeout rate after today's games. Like, that's not something you can look at and be like, oh my God, he's made these huge strides in the strikeout rate. Like, no. But the guy's swinging the bat harder. He's getting into his max speed more often. And that's a good sign. And so I am at least intrigued, if not excited, about what he brings to the table. And so I do think buying low, buying high, whatever you want to call it, an Arenado makes sense. Taking a quick look at some of the other names that stood out at me when I looked at the swing speed difference. The biggest swing speed gainer here is another Nolan Shanuel from the Angels. He unfortunately still does not swing very hard or swing hard very often. His average bat speed, just so you give an idea here, Arenado's gain went from 70.7 miles per hour to 72.4 miles per hour. Shanuel's went from 65.2 to 68.7. That is still, among this group of 167 players who qualified last year, qualified so far this year, that is the 15th lowest average bat speed. Shanuel's fast swing or hard swing percentage is the 9th lowest. You look at the guys around him. The two lowest are in terms of fast swing percentage are Luis Arraez and Stephen Kwan. Not a huge surprise there. Justin Turner, Keibert Ruiz, Andrew Benintendi, who It's a little interesting and maybe worth talking about at some point. Bryson Stott, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and Sal Frelick. So Shanuel, big gainer in theory and bat speed, but you know, still pretty uninteresting. The next biggest is Brendan Rodgers. That one is kind of interesting. And Rodgers, a little bit like Arenado, is a guy who, you know, are you buying high, buying low if you go to get him? I mean, first of all, let's start with this. Like, you're not going to get him in shallower leagues. I still don't know that he's a guy I'm super excited about. But he, you know, he's got a 140 WRC plus through Sunday. That would obviously be a buy high given what he's done the rest of his career, right? This is a big step forward. There's a 462 BABIP here. He is striking out 33% of the time. Now, he's also walking 11% of the time. He's only got 27 plate appearances because he's not even necessarily a full-time player. Like, it's, I don't think it's a buy high. It's more of a, is this guy worth picking up? I think he's worth watching at least. You know, there's an opportunity for him to grab closer to a full-time role, maybe stay healthy and be with an organization that knows how to help him a little bit more than maybe his old organization did. So Rodgers worth watching. Other gainers, Bryce Terang, Sal Frelick, Cody Bellinger, that's an interesting one. Vinny Pascantino, I mentioned before on the hard swing percentage, is the biggest gainer. He's also among the top in average bat speed gains. Xander Bogaerts, he had a really good second half of the year last year, and the start this year hasn't been great, but he's, I think, worth looking at because if he can pick up where he left off last year after these first few games, that'd be great. And the bat speed is a good sign. Andrew Benintendi, I've picked him up in a few places. I think he is starting to lift the ball and turn on the ball more. When he first went to Chicago, I was a little concerned about how that park might not help him, despite it being a known hitter's park, because he was a guy who hit line drives and sprayed them all over the field, and it's a small outfield, which means that if he hits line drives and sprays them all over, they're easier to defend. He's starting to pull the ball and get it in the air more, and so I like what I'm seeing a little bit there, and so I have picked him up a couple places, but he's still sort of a buy low. Anthony Volpe is up on this list, and plenty's been talked about him with the torpedo bats and all that. And the 10th biggest gainer, Pete Crow Armstrong. So another guy, sort of interesting, be curious to see what he does. I'm not super excited about PCA, but that's a good sign at least. Biggest bat speed decliners so far. First on this list is an interesting name. It's Jurickson Profar. That doesn't look great given the reason he is not playing right now. But big speed, bat speed decliner. Ty France, Juan Soto, still very, very good bat speed, but a little bit concerning, I guess, that it's down. George Springer may just be aging. William Contreras, who you just heard Pete talk about, maybe more reason for concern there. Jorge Soler is down. He's really turned it up the last couple days, though, so I think that it may not be a lot to worry about there. Nick Castellanos, Colt Keith, who, boy, he looked locked in as a first baseman, but he might lose his job at some point if he doesn't hit well and if Spencer Torkelson keeps hitting and if Gleyber Torres gets healthy. Willy Adames and Manny Machado, not super worried about either of those guys. But those are some of the big changes in bat speed. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to turn it right over to Pete coming out of the break to talk about the Colorado Rockies.
All right, for my second number, I don't really know what number to put on it. I'm going to make the number 2 because I want to stress how small the sample is this year. The Colorado Rockies have played 2 home games, and they didn't even perform like bad offensively in those games. They scored 3 runs in one, 4 runs in another. That's right around probably league average for how many runs are scored in a game. 3 to 4 runs, right? I'm just guessing, but, you know, that sounds about right. I understand that every year, Colorado is a tough place to pitch in. I do not expect that to change this year. Like, the geographical components to pitching in Coors Field are still going to be there. Fly balls are going to travel further. It's going to be hard to pitch. Poor Chase Dollander, poor whoever has to pitch there. I get that. What I want to push back on is this notion that nobody can stream anybody in Colorado. You know, I was listening to a fantasy baseball show that I like a lot, and before Nestor Cortez was placed on the IL, which is deeply concerning because it's once again that elbow, he was set to pitch in Coors this week, and that's Nestor Cortez, man. That's a home run fly ball pitcher pitching in Coors. Like, so much could go wrong. I understand that. And it was treated on this show like obviously you can't start him. And maybe I'm crazy because he did just get hammered by the Yankees. I was ready to pitch him this week against Colorado. Like, I get it. It's a tough place to pitch. The team is also really, really bad. And you could say, well, they were really bad last year, and it was still one of the hardest places to pitch in. I would agree with that. They hit 267 at home. That was tied for second in all of baseball, the Rockies. And if you look at that lineup and you say that they had the second best average at home, you know it has something to do with the home ballpark. That's fine. Their walk rate was fine. Their strikeout rate was high, 24.7%. I think that could get worse this year. They're not a good offense. They have not really added anything. They lost Nolan Jones. I don't think there's enough change from last year for me to think that strikeout rate is going to get any better, and I think it could certainly get worse. There's two sides to baseball, right? Like, there's the home team, and then there's the away team. And away teams hit against Colorado pitching 282 last year in Coors. Coors pitchers had a 1.52 whip at home. Both those numbers were by far the worst in baseball. They only struck out 17.7% of the hitters that they faced. So why does that make me want to stream against the Rockies in Coors? Well, I didn't go that far. Let's reel that in for a second. I'm not looking to stream in Colorado. I'm simply suggesting that this, just because it's Coors, does not mean that that should be taken off the table, that, oh, you can't stream somebody because it's Coors. What I am saying, though, is that wins is a category in most leagues. And Colorado's not going to win a lot of baseball games. As a matter of fact, J.P. Sears just threw a quality start in the second home game at Coors against the Rockies. J.P. Sears, fine pitcher, not a fantasy-relevant pitcher, not somebody anybody's rushing to pick up. Osvaldo Beto, same thing. He was an inning away from a quality start the night before. The Rockies lost both those games. If you had the cojones to stream Osvaldo Beto or J.P. Sears against the Rockies in Coors, oh, no, it turned out pretty good. Like, those ended up being decent streams for your ratios, for wins, at least in the case of J.P. Sears. So, like, I don't think the Rockies this year are going to be some team that you need to, like, take off the table for your streams. And I would encourage managers to think about doing it in spots. Was I in the right to be ready to stream Nestor Cortez against the Rockies? Probably not, right? I absolutely could see why that could have and probably would have ended poorly. But if you need wins, or you just need to compile some stats, and you've got a pretty ground ball heavy starter, some fringy guy, he's got a good offense that supports him, and he's pitching in Coors. In years past, sure, you still don't pitch him. Now, I don't know. I'm not so opposed to throwing that guy in Coors and expecting, you know, maybe he does end up with three earned runs or something like that, but I could leave that game with a win. And with some strikeouts, because that offense just isn't good. I don't care if they're playing in Coors. I don't care if they're on the road at Yankee Stadium or at Fenway. I don't care if they're playing on the moon. That offense is bad. And last year, even though I mentioned some of those numbers were pretty good, that was still like career best seasons from a lot of guys that I don't know if they're going to repeat them. Obviously, Brenton Doyle comes to mind, but it was a career best season for Michael Tolia. It was a career best season for Ezekiel Tovar. Like, up and down the lineup, it was still bad, but it was a lot of career best. I don't know if that's going to continue. I'm going to gamble that it's not, and I am not going to rule out streaming against the Colorado Rockies this season. If it's the right situation, I'm not closing the door just because it's Coors, whereas I think some people have had that mindset for a very long time. If you need help in whip, don't do it. If you need help in ERA, still probably don't do it. But anything else, man? I don't know. I'm just not scared of Coors because the Rockies are just so bad.
I don't know if I'm quite as confident as Pete in the idea that you could stream at Coors. I think the trade-off might be that playing more out of new leagues, whether that's points or 4x4 in particular, where home runs just hurt so much, you are opening yourself up to some risk there. And the reality is some of those guys you mentioned that had career years, like Tolia, they still can hit for power, right? You're still looking at a team that's going to hit a decent number of home runs at home. But I think he is right. Like, if you're chasing wins, yeah, I mean, You may start a pitcher there who doesn't have a great start, but there's a good chance the Rockies starter is going to have a worse one, and the Rockies are going to end up at the wrong end of the score. So it is an opportunity to chase some stats in a case where, you know, if you're in like a fab league, like I play in a dynasty league where I do need innings and wins and strikeouts, and it's daily fab. And late in the season in particular, streamers can get a little expensive. Like the guy streaming at Coors, nobody's bidding on him. You can get him cheap. So that is an interesting one, probably worth looking at. Jumping into my next number, I want to take a look at Christian Yelich. So Christian Yelich is a guy who I was high on in the offseason. I talked about how, you know, everyone was like, oh, he's having back surgery. How's he going to do? Blah, blah, blah. Like back surgery is not necessarily a bad thing for a guy who has dealt with back issues for a long time, right? He's had a lot of back problems. And this was a surgery meant to solve those. And so I was really intrigued. And Yelich is, you know, not off to a great start, to say the least, a 48 WRC plus, 234 WOBA. But I'm kind of intrigued, to be honest, still. And maybe that's just me, you know, refusing to admit when I was wrong. But he's walking over 15% of the time. His strikeout rate was really high for a while, but it has come down after the last couple days and is down under 30% now after Sunday, down to 28.2%. Part of that horrific WOBA is a 150 BABIP. And in addition to all that, coming into today, you know, coming into the day on Sunday, he had a 90.9 average exit velocity, a 47.1 hard hit rate, just a 5.9% barrel rate. That's just one barrel. We've talked already about how barrel rate is just such a small sample so far that it's sort of meaningless. Just a 104.6 max EV, but again, it's really early in the season. And then you jump into what happened on Sunday. And if you go to Baseball Savant and look up his game on Sunday, and things look like they're trending the right direction still. Yelich had four plate appearances. He had a ground out, a fly out, a line out, and a single. The exit velocities on those, 94, 102.4, 103.7, 110.2. So 110.2 sets a new max EV for the year. That is three more hard hit balls. 95 plus, I believe, is the hard hit cutoff, and 94, like, he nearly had four more hard hit balls. So that hard hit rate is going to go up. He is going to have that max EV go up. That 110 is still lower than it would has been in the past, but it's a step in the right direction. He showed some good bat speed, 71, 71.6, 74.8, and 76.9 on the four balls he made contact with. That's pretty good. And his, like, if I go look at his bat speed numbers for the year, they were down a little bit, but not very much. And that's all enough to make me think that if I think about the things that I was worried about, let's put it that way. If I look at the things I was worried about with Christian Yelich, I wasn't worried about his ability to draw a walk and get on base. I'm still not worried about that. I'm not super worried about his strikeout rate. I know it's high right now, like I talked about, but this guy's got a long track record of being successful with strikeout rates in the low to mid-20s, and I suspect he'll end up around there. What I was worried about was, how is he doing physically? Can he swing the bat as hard as he could before? Things like that. And the fact that the bat speeds up, the fact that he's starting to get some more hard hit, hard contact, all of that feels pretty good to me. I'm not saying that he's perfect and healthy and everything's good. He did get a late start to spring training, so maybe he's still catching up a little bit. But I like what I'm seeing, and I think that it's a good sign, in my opinion, that he's able to swing the bat hard, that he's making a lot of hard contact. I think that BABIP is obviously going to come up from where it is. I feel pretty good about how he's doing. Now, there are some concerning numbers. His sprint speed is down. He's put up sprint speeds the last few years, 28.4, 28.1, 28.1, 28.5 last year. It's 27.3 this year. That's a little concerning. Maybe it'll come up, right? It's still early, and so it is the kind of thing where, like, a couple of lazy runs, I don't know, a couple of slow runs could skew that. I'm not writing that off, but I'm also not super concerned about it yet. The big thing I was looking at was the quality of contact, right? That was the thing I was looking for. Could he still get the bat speed up? Could he still make good, solid contact? Because that's where I was really worried about the back and its impact it would have on his performance. And so I'm looking at what Christian Yelich is doing, and I think I probably would try to buy low. I'm not sure you can. I did see, there was a comment in the Auto News Slack recently from someone saying that he's looked really bad. And I think a lot of people feel that way, and the numbers are terrible, right? I mean, like, the overall numbers are bad. But under the hood, I'm seeing some good signs that he's healthy and going to be himself. And if that's the case, like, this could be the moment to buy in on Christian Yelich. There certainly won't be a better one, because he's either going to turn it around, it'll be too late to buy, or he's not going to turn around, and then you won't want to. But the strikeout rate is already trending down. The exit velocities are already trending up. The bat speeds are trending up. It's all the things you want to see. And so I feel pretty good about Christian Yelich. So with that, let's take another break. And when we come back, we'll get into our last couple of stats for the day. All right, welcome back. We're going to turn things over now to Pete for one more stat from him before I steal it back to go to my last set of numbers.
All right. Wow. I am almost through this, and I'm going to try to be quick on this last one. I'm averaging about 10 minutes per, and I want to be a little under for this one. So here we go. My last number that I want to present is, once again, batting average. I'm bringing up batting average for all three. And it's obviously, you know, again, if you're a listener of this show a long time, you know that's not usually a stat that we get hung up on. But it is one of our five categories, and it's more a bigger picture than just batting average. But the batting average is what sticks out to me here. And that would be the number 219. So I gave you that the second round hitters, according to NFBC ADP for 12-team leagues, is 220. 219 is the batting average of all first basemen so far this season, courtesy of Fangraphs. That number is even worse than catcher. If batting average is not your thing, then you're like, all right, come on, you're bringing up batting average again. Fine. I don't disagree. They have a 91 WRC+. Only shortstop is worse so far this year. They have a 23.9% K rate. That's the worst of all positions if you view outfield as outfield and not as right field, center field, left field, because I think left field technically has a higher strikeout rate than first base. They have less combined home runs than second base so far. Think about that one for a minute. And all first basemen are combined 10 for 14 in stolen base attempts. You don't expect to get stolen bases out of your first baseman, but only 10 total so far out of all the first basemen in baseball. Not a surprise there, but not something that makes me feel better about the position. They also have, get ready for this, the second worst position OPS. They're at 680, and the only worse is shortstops at 653. First baseman, 680. If you've been playing as long as a lot of other guys have, as long as Chad and I have, you know that first base has always been like one of the best positions in fantasy. We've had a few down years a little bit recently, but first base is usually a spot where, like, you can depend on the 250, 30 homer, 80 RBI guy. And in the early going, and it looked this way during draft season, which is why I think it's worth bringing up. It didn't look during draft season that second round hitters were going to be bad. But it did kind of look like during draft season, like, uh-oh, first base is a little thin. And we're one or two, you know, disappointing seasons or come back to earth seasons away from this position potentially being really, really bad. And that's kind of what's happened so far. Now, it's a tiny sample, like all of this is, right? And you're going to continue to hear us say that for the next 2 months, basically. But those numbers are what they are. The other positions are not hitting as poorly as first base. Last year, first baseman had a 104 WRC plus. This year it's at 91. The K rate was almost two full percentage points lower, which is kind of significant when you're talking about a sample that big, like an entire season's worth of first baseman at bats. Their strikeout rate was 2 points better. That's not nothing. So, I mean, this is totally situational, because you could be a listener who's hearing all this information and you're in one league, and in that one league, your first baseman is Vlad Guerrero Jr., and you know you're going to be fine at first base. If that's not your situation, though, if you're somebody who got stuck with Michael Tolia, who got stuck with Tristan Cassis, or in my case, reached for Tristan Cassis, there's not a lot out there to make you feel better about your first base situation. And I think this is something worth monitoring. And in the early going, I'm kind of looking at first base and being like, man, maybe if I'm in a really long-term league and I'm stashing someone like Nick Kurtz or something like that, I'll feel okay, because maybe at some point this season I know I'm going to have a first baseman I can rely on. But Luis Arraez not hitting for average. Josh Naylor, no home runs. I mean, I could go up and down this list. Christian Walker, is he just getting older? 5-for-31 with only one homer. Spencer Steer, a guy who, like, yes, I've picked on in the past. This might feel like a little bit of confirmation bias. He is 1-for-21 so far this season. And that one, by the way, I'm pretty sure is a single. Yeah, we've had some nice performances from guys like Soderstrom, Torkelson, and Ben Rice, who are first base eligible. So I don't know if those count towards their actual stats, if they're like DHing that day or whatever, in terms of the number that Fangraphs gave me. But like, it clearly isn't enough to bring that position back to life. So it's disappointed so far. We were kind of worried it could disappoint. And I don't see a lot of ways it gets that much better. Vinny P, guys like that might just be who they are and are not ready to take forward whatever step some of us thought they would take, like him, like Cassis, so on and so forth. It doesn't help that, like, the top of the position, you look at the first three players drafted at the position, Vlad Jr., Bryce Harper, Freddie Freeman, two of them are off to slow starts. We already talked about those two at the beginning. And then there's Freddie Freeman, who obviously is on the IL, despite already having two homers, which is more than Harper and Vlad Guerrero Jr. combined. But the top three guys at the position are not themselves yet. That's going to affect those numbers. I'm just keeping an eye on it, because I can't remember first base appearing to be so bad, and certainly through the first 2 weeks actually performing so poorly. So if you have the ability to, like, lock yourself up a first baseman who's pretty good, I would start considering paying a premium, because if, you know, I am sitting there with Nathaniel Lowe, or I'm sitting there with Wilmer Flores or Carlos Santana as my first baseman, like, I don't see things getting better. I would want to start making some moves to be elite at that position, because it looks like it's going to be pretty scarce.
You know, that one's an interesting one, because so much of it depends who you roster. And I was buying in on Spencer Torkelson most of the offseason, and then panicked and tried to get rid of a bunch of Torkelson, but nobody wanted him by the end of the offseason. And yeah, that's worked out quite well. I've got some Tyler Soderstrom. I've got some Matt Olson, who's off to a perfectly fine start. Josh Naylor, no home runs, but the bat's been good, a 113 WRC plus. Vinny Pascantino hasn't been great, but does have 7 RBI through 7 games, which is helping my teams where I have him. I also have picked up Kyle Manzardo in a couple of places. And so when I look at what my options are at first base, they've been pretty solid, actually. So I'm not sure I totally realized how down this was. Oh, Paul Goldschmidt, another guy I've got on a couple teams, 163 WRC plus. So it's an interesting one where Pete's right. I mean, the position is down. I've got Christian Walker, who's been terrible. Naylor does have no home runs. Christian Encarnacion Strand is stepping up, but people expected more out of him. Bryce Harper's been bad. He's not wrong to call this out. It's just fascinating, because until Pete told me he was using that for one of his stats, I was like, what? No, that doesn't make sense. And then he went through the numbers like, yeah, okay, fair enough. I've just been kind of lucky, which is fascinating, because my teams have been terrible. So the rest of my positions are obviously not doing great. That does bring me to the last guy I want to talk about, or the last number, right? And in this case, it is a guy I want to talk about, and that's Mookie Betts. And the number I want to talk about specifically for Mookie is his ex-WOBA, which coming into play on Sunday, it might have gotten a little better on Sunday. He was 2-for-5, had a double, also had a couple strikeouts. So maybe not. We'll see. But his ex-WOBA coming into the day Sunday was 319. That's not like terrible, terrible. But he's got a 424 WOBA coming into the day. By the end of the day, that was up to 425. He obviously has, you know, three home runs, including the two big ones early on. And, like, you know, we watched him really have a power outage last year, right? He missed some time as part of it, but 516 plate appearances, just 19 home runs. The 371 WOBA was still good overall, but it wasn't from a fantasy perspective what you would have hoped for out of him. Again, partially because of that missed time, but, you know, he wasn't on pace to get anywhere near the runs, RBIs, or home runs he put up in 2023. And that was sort of what people were expecting. And so now you've got this question of, do you buy back in? Do you not buy back in? And then he has this crazy stomach bug or whatever where he could, you know, swing a bat and do baseball stuff, but couldn't keep solid food down. And he lost anywhere from, what, 15 to 18 pounds or something like that, people were reporting. And I was concerned. And then he goes out and he has, you know, those big home runs early in the season. His overall line is great. Everything looks really good. You go, look at that X-Wo, but it's just 319. And why is it just 319? Because despite three home runs, he has one barrel. His hard hit rate is actually sort of fine at 40%. But his average EV, it's early for average EV. We've talked about this. But 25 batted ball events, average EV, 86.7. That is way down from last year's 89.9, which was way down from 92.4 the year before. His career number is 90.5. He, until last year, hadn't been below 90 since 2017. So now he's down below 87. It's early. His max EV, again, three home runs, max EV, 100.8. His launch angle in the season, 4.3. So he is not hitting the ball hard. He's not hitting line drives. His line drive rate is 12%. It was 24.4% last year, 23.7% the year before, 20.9% for his career. He's not elevating the ball. Fly ball rate is 36%. It was 48.6% last year, 44.2% for his career. His numbers are very heavily inflated by a 33.3% home run per fly ball rate that doesn't look real sustainable given what he's done with the bat so far and those low exit velocities and the lack of barrels and the low launch angle and all of that stuff, which is why the ex-WOBA is where it is. I am still concerned about Betts' power. His power dropped off a lot last year and, like we said, lost a lot of weight this spring. And, you know, weight, that could be, you know, we talk lots of times like, oh, that guy came in slim, blah, blah, blah. Like, he didn't lose weight because he was trying to get in shape. Like, Mookie's not a big dude. He didn't need to lose weight. He lost, like, you know, 10% of his body weight or something. And that's not a positive thing, I don't think. I don't think anybody thinks it is for him. So, I don't know. I look at what's going on with Betts, and I kind of wonder if it's time to try to see what you can get for him. Now, in redraft, you're not doing that, right? I get in redraft, if you drafted him in the first round, which is where you had to take him, you can't give up on him yet because you're not going to get commensurate value back. In a dynasty league, in a keeper league where you held him and the price isn't terrible, or even if the price is high, like, there may be an opportunity to shuffle things around and swap him out for one or more other players who could help you more. And this isn't to say that I think Betts is going to be bad. Like, I want to be very, very clear here. Like, I think there's a good chance he repeats what he did last year. He misses some time. He gets around 20 home runs. He steals you 15 bases. He's 75, 80 runs in RBIs. That isn't what you paid for with him, and that's not what his market value is right now. And so if you can trade, you know, 2023 value Betts or something close to that, I would do it. Because I don't think we're going to get back to that. And I think there's been some sense in the early days of the season, like, oh, they got the three home runs. And, like, you know, he has three home runs through 30 plate appearances. That's like, he's on pace for 60 home runs. And if he misses time and only gets 500 plate appearances, that's still 50 home runs. Like, I get it. Nobody actually thinks he's on that pace. Like, nobody out there is calling for 50 home runs. But for a guy who, you know, 2022 at 35 home runs, 2023 at 39 home runs before he hit 19 last year. I do think you're going to see people who are like, oh, he's going to bounce back and have 30, 35 home runs. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think the early returns, while they look good on the surface with a 182 WRC plus, a 425 WOBA, underneath the hood, it's not as rosy. He's walking less. He's striking out right around where he was last year, which was a good year for him from a strikeout rate perspective. But he's walking less. He's striking out at a similar clip. His chase rate is way up. It's 31.1%. That is, or at least it was going into the day Sunday. He's been 22.8 for his career. He's never been above like 25.5, 26. 26 is the highest he's been. So this is a huge jump there. His contact rate is up, but a lot more of that contact is now outside the zone, which is not good contact. Now, maybe he just needs to stop chasing. Maybe the whole issue here is just that he's chasing too much, and if he chases left, less, he'll make less bad contact, and, you know, those numbers will come up. But that max EV still stands out to me as a little bit of a concerning number, because it's just so low at 100. And you wonder about it. Like, I wonder about it. He's not getting into high-end power. So it's not just that he's making a lot of soft contact, which could be a result of, like I said, you know, hitting the ball outside the zone, and that's sort of the issue. He's not making much good contact. Right? So the average is not being pulled down purely because he's making a lot of weak contact. He's got that one ball at 100.8. He's got another at 100.3. He's got a bunch of others in sort of the 97 to 99 range, but he's not getting into truly his max EV range. He's not getting into the high end power that we would expect from him. And that's concerning to me. We've talked a little bit about bat speed here, and so, you know, do want to talk about his bat speed. It was down last year. Now, bat speed data only exists going back to, like, I think the second half of 2023. He was 71.3 that year with a 20.7% fast swing rate. Last year, that was down to 69 on average, 9.6 for his fast swing rate. This year, it's down to 67.1 with a 6.5% fast swing rate. I see a lot of really concerning numbers here. There's a stat that StatCast tracks called blasts. Blasts measures basically how often a guy squares up a ball with high bat speed. That number is way down for Betts. Everything I look at for Mookie Betts under the hood looks concerning. I was already concerned, and so this is just reinforcing for me that I was right to be concerned. And yeah, that's sort of how I'm thinking through this. So I'm not telling you to, you know, don't cut Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is not going to be terrible. Mookie Betts is not, you know, forever broken. But I think that he's more like what he was last year. He's in his age 32 season, I believe. He's 32 now. Yeah, he won't be 33 till after the season, during the postseason. But he's in his age 32 season. He's coming off a rough year where his power declined, where the underlying things you'd look for to see if his power was okay also declined. And now they've declined more. We know that he's lost weight. I'm nervous about Mookie Betts being able to bounce back to anything resembling his draft cost or what he did in 2022, 2023. I think the 2024 more version is what you should be expecting. And if you could sell for more than that, I would do it. So that's it. That's our three stats apiece. Pete talked about the low performance of second round picks, the low performance of first baseman, and just how bad the Rockies are and what that might mean for streaming at Coors. I talked a little bit about being intrigued by Nolan Arenado, still high on Christian Yelich, and concerned about Mookie Betts. hopefully that's helpful information. Hopefully this format didn't, you know, turn you off completely. Next week I will be away, but Pete will be back with you, probably with a guest host. Not quite sure yet who that's going to be. Then in a couple weeks we'll be back together doing this the way it's meant to be done. But for now, we hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll talk to you soon.